you know, all the comedians are talking about it. Well, I worked with Carlin. I worked with him in New York and Hollywood. And then even when I came back here to Cleveland, I got together with him. And when I was writing my second book, which is called Comedy FAQs and Answers, really comedians were literally around the world. I mean, Australia, India, Pakistan, I mean, Russia. I had people sending me questions. I answered them the best I could, but I also contacted working comics, people I respected, to get their answers. And I had one sent in to me, says, is it better to work clean or dirty? And I thought, well, who better to ask that than George Carlin? So I called him. Oh, this is great. Call me back tomorrow, 11 o'clock. We'll talk all about this. So I called his office and he gave me an answer for that. But then he went off into how he writes comedy.
Now, broadcasting live from the Podcast Palace on Park Street in beautiful and dangerous Clearwater, Florida, it's the Comedians Uncorked podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Tony Gaud and Pat Largo.
Hey guys, welcome to season 3 of the Comedians Uncorked podcast with Pat Largo and Tony Gaud. And of course, a huge thank you to you guys for checking us out. Season 3, we cannot believe the first two flew by. Thank you for checking us out on YouTube and Spotify. And a huge thank you to our in-studio sponsor, Julie Drolshagen of Century 21, right here in beautiful Clearwater, Florida. You can get her at 727-902-9233 or FloridaBeachBusiness.com.
FloridaBeachBusiness.com for all your real estate needs right here in Clearwater.
And this is a guest right here that, Tony, you told me about. And I said, wow, this sounds, we've had so many interesting ones over the last few months. This gentleman right here has done everything in comedy and TV, from A&E's and Evening at the Improv to working as talent coordinator for all the improvs in New York and L.A. and everything in between in our country. And also the author of How to Be a Working Comic. Please welcome Mr. Dave Schwensen. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, Pat, Tony, thank you very much for having me, guys. This is really exciting.
I'll tell you what's really great is, because a part of what we've been doing with the podcast is, we're not only are we talking to comedians about, you know, their comedy life and, you know, like the business, but we've been educating, trying to educate comics, young comics, people interested in comedy, and that kind of thing. And I couldn't think of anybody better to do that than the guy that actually wrote the book. But before we get into that, not only do you deal in comedy, but you also train people in live speaking engagements. Mm-hmm. You've written college courses. And not only did you write the book on comedy, you've written a few books on the Beatles.
Yeah, you got that? What? it sounds like I've been busy. I'm tired all of a sudden.
Yeah, you're very busy.
So, in case nobody's noticed, I'm in the car. I also drive my wife around while she's shopping.
In between all that, he drives his wife around.
he's an Uber driver.
Yeah.
Oh, no, don't do that. Well, I'm not picking any calls. I'm not picking up anybody else. Just my wife. That's it.
Well, you're going to drive around doing the interview.
This guy wants... Dave wants all the money. He wants even be an Uber driver. He wants all the dough.
That's it.
Yeah. No, it's not worth it. Did you hear what I just said? She's shopping. I got no money and no money.
This is why he's doing all those things. But you've been engaged in entertainment itself for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Like, what was the first thing that you delved into? Was it the music or was it comedy?
It's a long story, and I'll age myself only by saying that I graduated college with a degree in business and marketing, and got in my brand new Vegas station wagon, and I drove to New York City because I wanted to be in show business, and there was no show business out here at that time where I was. So I moved to New York City. I didn't know a soul. I knew nobody. 12 million people. I didn't know anybody. I lucked into an apartment after walking around for 3 days. I found an apartment I could afford. And my first thing I got into really was acting, because I had done some shows, you know, high school, college things. I thought, well, I didn't want a real job, basically, guys. You know what I'm talking about. That's why we're doing this podcast. We don't have real jobs.
Well, here we are.
I went to New York and I studied with the famous acting coach, Lee Strasberg. He was my, I was in his group with him. And at that time, of course, I was very young, and all the people in his class were working actors. They were doing Broadway. They were doing feature films, commercials, and it kind of took me under their wings, which was real nice. So that's why I started learning about the business. You know, because again, my books in comedy, How to Be a Working Comic, my other books, I consider them to be business books. It's not like how to write a joke. You know,
yeah, that's another thing I wanted to get into because I see now as a comedian, like I've been, you know, I've been doing this like, you know, over 20 years myself. And the biggest thing when people would talk to you about, you know, you talk to other comics back then, it's like, don't take acting class. Don't take comedy classes because it's just a scam. You're not going to learn anything, blah, blah, blah. And for a lot of that, it was true because guys were just trying to get over, you know, like, hey, here's how you write a joke. But you're presenting something that a lot of people don't really get that information until they've become a comic and they've learned through trial and error. But you're actually teaching people the business of comedy, not just how to be funny, not just trying to be funny. Can you get into that part as well?
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, my career then took me behind the scenes. You know, I mean, it's a long story. But, you know, when I wound up in Hollywood, I was Bud Friedman's assistant. You know, nobody's bigger in comedy than Bud.
Wow. And, improv, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Hollywood Improv. And, you know, before that, I was the manager and talent booker for the New York Improv, the original one. So, you know, and again, I always say I'm a behind the scenes guy. Now I do, you know, I just, all these stories I have, I do like last night, I did a presentation. I talk to corporate events. I do book presentations. I'm on stage a lot and I enjoy that part of it. But when it came to the comedy thing, I was really behind the scenes. So I moved to Cleveland, where I'm from originally. I came back to start my own business and a lot of, you know, some family stuff was going on. I had to come back. And, but I always thought I'd go back to Hollywood. It was just like, you know, even Bud says the door is always open for you to come back. I said, give me like a few months. Well, I never came back. It's what happens when you get married and have two kids. But the only people I knew on here, because I was gone for almost 20 years, were the headlining comedians when they would come around. So it'd be like, you know, the Cleveland Improv. We have another club out here called Hilarities, you know, very big. And
I played there.
You played there?
Okay. Yeah.
It's a beautiful club. Yeah. And, we were talking earlier before we went on the air, like say about Bobby Collins, who's a friend of mine. And, but all the, you know, Jeff Foxworthy, Drew Carey, I could go on and on. They were people I knew from Hollywood. So when they played Cleveland, I didn't know anybody else. So I go to the club and I go backstage, I hang around the green room. I'm talking with those guys and the local comics kept going, who's that guy pointing to me? Who's he? And the comics would say, well, that's Dave Schwenson. He booked Evening at the Improv, the TV show. He was Bud's assistant and everything. So they started coming up and asking me all these questions about how do I get on television? How do I get an agent? What does a manager do? You know, do I need a website? All this. And so I decided to do one workshop because I used to be a guest speaker at these things also. And LA people would do a comedy workshop. I'd come in for a day and I would talk. This is what we do, look for at the improv, yada, yada, yada. And I thought I would do one workshop. What I was going to say was I did one workshop. I thought I'd do one workshop and, you know, I put out the Cleveland comics, whoever wants to show up, I'll take up to 10 people and we'll sit here. And, like I said, that's about 25 years ago. And
wow,
it hasn't stopped. And matter of fact, I have another one coming up starting like a month from today and the people are already signing up for it. So, but you know, and also what I do is not, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it's also comedy coaching. Cause I coach people in what, you know, we would look for when I was booking, say Evening at the Improv or the Improv clubs, or, you know, I mean, I consulted, I worked with the Tonight Show. I worked with MTV and Comedy Central, all those, because they would all do their showcases at the Improv. But even since I've been back here, I'm still in touch with a lot of the people I worked with. Thank goodness for like the internet, you know, Facebook and all that kind of stuff. And so it is comedy coaching too. I mean, I tell them, you know, I share advice basically. I always say, it's nothing I made up. I'm going to tell you how George Carlin wrote material. I'm going to tell you what Drew Carey told me about writing material. I'm going to tell you what Margaret Cho, you know, these are the people I've worked with and I share the information. And I always say, I didn't make the stuff up. This is what they do. And this can maybe
they always told me it took like 10 years to get on the Tonight Show. That was always when I was writing the first book. And I always tell everyone, I tried to take a couple months off that learning curve.
Yeah.
So,
you know, that's what it is. And, you know, how to get on stage, how to do the business, and also help them write a set, you know, creativity.
Wow. So,
particular part.
Yeah.
Like I know you do the coaching, but the behind the scenes stuff, the talent coordinating. I mean, I love that kind of stuff. I love getting involved with that kind of thing. Is there something you enjoy more than the other?
No, I like both of it. I'm a big name dropper, and they all make fun of me about that because I have all the people in my workshop. It's like a joke. Oh, here goes Dave's gonna drop some names again. But I've always been told that's the most entertaining part because I will say, you know what you're doing? I saw Dave Chappelle do that, you know, and this is what he did, blah, blah, blah. And I don't drop names just to drop names, but it always has to have a meaning. Like, okay, I saw somebody do this. I talked to Ellen DeGeneres. This is what her first set was like, and this is how she developed. That kind of stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, it relates to what they're doing. So it's actually
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So
that,
you know, even like, and, you know, even like now when I talk to them about writing comedy, because right now on HBO, Judd Apatow has that George Carlin two-parter in the mind or whatever of George Carlin. I don't know if you're familiar with that. If you've seen that, I watched just the first part. It's tremendous. Well, it's, you know, all the comedians are talking about it. Well, I worked with Carlin. I worked with him in New York and Hollywood. And then even when I came back here to Cleveland, I got together with him. And when I was writing my second book, which is called Comedy FAQs and Answers, because I had really comedians from literally around the world. I mean, Australia, India, Pakistan, I mean, Russia. I had people sending me questions, you know, about the comedy industry. So that's how the second book developed. I took the questions that were actually sent to me. I answered them the best I could. But I also contacted working comics, people I respected, to get their answers. And I had one sent in to me, says, is it better to work clean or dirty as a comedian? I thought, well, who better to ask that than George Carlin? So I called him. I had his number. And I said, George, he goes, oh, this is great. Call me back tomorrow at 11 o'clock. We'll talk all about this. So I called his office and he gave me an answer for that. But then he went off into how he writes comedy.
Wow.
The George Carlin, how to write comedy technique. And it's no secret. I mean, I know he's told a lot of other comics.
I have a quick one there because when I always get under Tony's skin if I say something like dirty or adult material, because Tony's like, what does that mean? It's subjective. And this is what I do. I don't, you know, what is clean? What is dirty? So is there a certain definition? Because I would love to know or be able to tell other people when they ask me, like either you could tell us maybe what George said or maybe your opinion, Dave. What is there a dirty and a clean? Is there a definition for dirty, so to speak?
It depends where you are. Now, again, I'm a behind the scenes guy. So not only did I book shows in the comedy clubs, I've booked theater shows. I've booked corporate events. I've booked colleges, the whole bit. Right. Each market has its own standard. When you're a headliner doing a comedy club, you can say anything you damn well please. As long as you're selling tickets and putting butts in the seats, that's what really those, you know, comedy clubs, that's what the owners look forward to. Right. But they also do have their rules. Okay. They do have like some things they don't like. There are clubs out there where you cannot drop the F-bomb. Okay. And I remember years ago, this is, I don't know how many years ago this was, my friend Dave Attell was coming to Cleveland where I was, and I was going to go see him the next night. And another buddy of mine in New York called because Gotham Comedy Club, you know, is real big in New York, and they had a rule. I don't know if they still have the rule. They had a rule back then. You could not drop the F-bomb on stage. All right. Or you get banned. So I went to see Attell, and I got a call from my buddy. He says, hey, man, Attell just got banned from Gotham. He dropped the F-bomb. I said, seriously? I said, I want to see him. So I went to see him. He's at the Improv in Cleveland. And I went over, I said, hey, so I heard you got banned from Gotham. He goes, damn, just because I said, you know, fuck, doggone it. So it took him a few weeks to get back in. But here he was, he had this, you know, at that time he had his TV show on, you know, whatever that was called, Insomniac or something.
Yeah.
So I always tell newer comedians the smartest thing to do is when you go somewhere, ask the club owner or management, whoever it might be you're talking to, is there anything I should not say? Anything I should not talk about? They always appreciate that. I've gotten calls from clubs where they wanted X-rated comics. That's what they wanted. Don't send anything else. Okay, I've gotten other ones, you know, where they don't want any swear words at all. Bud Friedman always had a rule at the Improv in Hollywood. Do not go up there and make fun of anyone who has AIDS, unless you have AIDS yourself. And do not go up there and talk about homeless people being bums, because they're just kind of down on their luck. And Bud had that feeling for him. And the comics knew that. Don't go, if you want to get, you know, if you want to get banned from the Improv, go up and talk about those subjects and you're out.
Wow.
That's what it was years ago when I was there. And
yeah, that's a great answer, yeah.
You know, and I'll argue with people about corporate shows. They're G-rated, PG-rated max. And I've gotten to some, not arguments, but I've seen people on LinkedIn saying, oh, you can drop an F-bomb at corporate shows nowadays. No, you can't. Bottom line, no, you can't.
This is one of the reasons. I don't really do corporate stuff like that anymore, because I'm like, look, this is my show. I'm like, this is my brand. This is it. If this is cool with you, I'm down to do the show. If it's not, then I'm just not the comic for the show. But yeah, corporate, that's, you know, they don't want to hear that. That's like, that's official.
And a lot of, and this is the kind of stuff I try to share with comics, because if you don't have that experience yet, you're just breaking in the market. They're going to take advantage of you. I've had this happen with comics I've sent out to do their very first corporate show. And they'll get there early, and there's the new, you know, like the 20-somethings, 30-somethings. They're hanging around the open bar. And a comic will go over to them. Is there anything I should talk about? Oh, no, let it rip, man. Say whatever you want. We love it. Let it rip. So they go up there, and they start dropping the F-bomb, start talking about their sex life. In the meantime, in the back of the room is the CEO, you know, and her husband or his wife, whoever it might be. And this is supposed to be a family event. So I know, as a talent booker, I've had this happen. And I got the call the next day. And, you know, they never call you to say how great it was. They're going to call you when something's wrong.
Right.
And that's another good point right there. Getting booked for a corporate gig, usually you're going through a booker that deals with corporate gigs. So they're going to hear about whatever happened. They get a report. You know, this is a professional thing. They give a report. It's like, were they satisfied? You know, were they not? If they have complaints, and then if you don't get called again, you know why.
Yes. And you know, and it's just like, you know, a lot of the comedy club bookers, you know, it's a very small world. And a lot of comics don't realize that. If you screw up for one guy, a lot of times, I've had it happen. I've had people call me, Dave, do you know such and such a comedian? Yeah, I do. Don't ever book her or don't ever book him, because they promised a clean show. They went up there and they dropped the C word. They did this and that. And they're calling all the talent bookers they're in touch with not to book this person.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've seen it happen. And, you know, so I always say, when you play somewhere, just find out in advance, is there anything you would not like me to talk about? Anything you would not like me to say?
Can
you get a Pat out of business right there? That one question is going to put Pat out of business.
I know. I'm looking at Craigslist right now to see if I could deliver pizzas, because I got nothing left.
But that's all right, because there's a market for everything.
Oh, great.
There's a market for everything.
If you don't mind me asking, and this might be, I might have to buy the book, but can you give us a little tidbit of what Carlin said about it, about dirty writing?
His whole writing technique. Yeah, I got to buy the book. And that one is in my book called How to Be a Working Corporate Comedian.
Okay.
And but I do online workshops, and that's the main thing I recommend. You know, again, I don't believe there's not a formula for writing jokes. There are books out there, how to write a joke. I tell people, burn them. You don't want to be a clone of somebody else. This is creativity. You're a creative artist.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to talk about, you know, I mean, I used to hang around, you know, at the New York City Improv. We used to laugh about this all the time. Because there was one comedian, I won't mention his name, he's a legend, I love the guy, but his whole thing was make every joke just three lines, an opener, a middle, and a punchline. Didn't matter who you were. And he would tell this to everybody, but I was working time like Ray Romano. Everybody loves Raymond. Wonderful storyteller. Yeah. He couldn't do that. Larry David hung out with us every night. He couldn't do that. The only one who could, you know, I mean, you know, Rodney Dangerfield would come in a lot. That was all his jokes, you know, all three lines. Yeah. Like,
right.
But you can't give that kind of, you know, structure, I guess, or, you know, confine someone that way, because everyone's got their own creativity. So the thing about George Carlin, I just kind of share what he told me to help someone if they're in like a writer's block or anything like that. Here's what Carlin did.
Okay.
But Carlin, when I talked to him, you know, I mean, the guy's a legend. You know, you can't put him in a box. You can't say he says this, he says that. But from my interactions with him and talking, you know, he never considered himself to be a dirty act. You know, he said the seven words you can't say on television, but he was making fun of the language. He was not, you know, graphically saying, you know, this is how you do this or whatever kind of stuff. Yeah, he was right. Talking about language. But he did tell me that a lot of times he used language to make sure he had the audience's attention. And I don't know the language you have on here, but I'll give you the example. The example he gave me on the phone was he's doing a bit. He's talking this and that. If he thinks the audience is nodding off, if he thinks they're not paying attention, he's going to drop a word in there like, and the word he used was pussy fart. That's the word he used when I talked to him. He'll say a word like that. He said, it's like their heads have all hit a speed bump.
Yeah.
He said, it'll be like, both. All of a sudden they're paying attention again because they want to hear what he's going to say next.
Yeah, that's a great technique. That's great. That's perfect. Yeah.
But I mean, that's really, literally, that's exactly what he told me. And, but he was, of course, you know, freedom of speech. I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You have to be in this business. You don't have to be. I mean, I've worked with Christian comedians. I've worked with XXX comedians. It doesn't bother me either way. But you have to find your own audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to be true.
Yeah. I mean, in one of my books, the comedian Rondell Sheridan, who I just loved, one of the greatest storytellers of all time. He said in the book, he said, if you swear in real life, you're going to swear on stage. But if you don't swear in real life, don't think you're going to go on stage and start doing that because it's going to make you funny.
Yeah. It's forced. Okay. Doesn't look right. Natural. Of course.
Exactly.
You just have to be yourself. So that's the kind of things I try to share with the comedians in my workshops and newer comedians and in my books. It's just, I'm just sharing things that other people told me.
And I appreciate you dropping the Carlin story, man. Just to be able to you know, to be able to pick up a phone like you did and speak with him. That's amazing. So
I'm still in awe over that I was able to do that.
That's pretty cool, man.
When you work with people like that, I mean, I think back to some of the people I worked with. I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? These guys are major superstars, you know. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know.
That's not dropping names.
I'm hanging on. I'm hanging on to my Jackie Mason story, man.
You got me. Yeah.
I got tour with Jackie Mason, so I'm there.
I got a Jackie Mason story also.
Okay.
But it's not a nice one. So I'm not going to. Oh, man.
It's okay. He's not alive.
This is not clean comedy. Let me ask you a question. I mean, you've known a lot of guys over the years. You've actually had the ability to see guys from the beginning to a flourishing career.
Yes.
Have you met anybody that you know or that you've seen have done like a 360 or converted, you know, like they turned things around. Maybe they were going the wrong directions and they pivoted and got back on track.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'll tell you a story right now. There was a comic when I ran the New York City Improv. And the people I worked with back in those days, I'm talking about the late 80s now, early 90s. So a lot of those comics have gone on to be very well. I mean, Dave Attell was my doorman. Come on.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So Attell, and I love, he's one of my favorite comedians of all time and as a person. But he was the kind of guy, if I needed someone on stage, I'd grab him and say, Dave, go up and give me 5 minutes. So even if I were to see him today or something, the first thing I'm going to say to him is, man, you owe me. You owe me. Okay. But, you know, these stories. We used to do auditions at the New York City Improv the first Sunday of every month. And it was a lottery. You had to pull a number out of a big champagne bucket. I mean, a lot of blank pieces of paper in there, but maybe 15 numbers. You got to go up and audition for 3 minutes that night. And the owner at that time, Silver Saunders, she was the owner. Bud Friedman started the club, the Silver, long story, his ex-wife. And I loved her and worked very well with her. And she and I would sit in the back of the room to watch the auditions. And Silver, you know, had the final say about anything. Well, there was a comedian who we all knew from the open mic scene, real nice guy. His name's Jeff Lipschultz. Very nice guy. Wasn't funny. Anyway, he pulled a number one time. He got up on a Sunday night and he did his 3 minutes. It wasn't funny. And she passed him. she passed him for the audition. And we're like, oh man. And I'm like, I'm the one giving out spots. I'm like, well, where am I going to fit in? He's not funny. I don't want to put him on a show. But he's a nice guy. Jeff, hey man, good to see you, but I can't give you a spot tonight. I'm sorry. And we're all talking about this. And I even remember one time Silver got in my book. We had the upcoming acts. And like, she'd go like 2-3 weeks in advance. She would write his name in for like a 7-minute set, like on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock. Wow. And we're like, oh man, Lipschultz going on. Okay. Anyway, okay, a couple of years later, I'm out in Hollywood. Now I'm working for Bud. And I got an office next door to Bud's office, the Hollywood Improv. And I got a TV in there because I'm watching TV. And they were doing a Comedy Central roast. And they introduced the roast master general. And Jeffrey Ross comes walking out. That's Jeff Lipschultz. So I called my friend in New York City, another comic by the name of Chris Murphy, who does workshops in New York City. I called him up. I go, Jeffrey Ross? He goes, yeah. I said, what the hell happened? He goes, I don't know, man. He got funny.
That is awesome.
I mean, I'm telling you, he found his niche. He wasn't anything like that when we saw him in New York. He became this, you know, the roast master. He's very funny. I'm a big Jeffrey Ross fan. I mean, he's great. But back in the early days, you know, you got to think, Tony, when you were starting out, Pat, when you were starting out, you know, you got to find your comedy voice is what they call it. And it can take years to find that, who you are. But if it clicks, you know, so that's one of my favorite stories about that stuff.
That's a great story. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That is really, and you're right. He's a very, very nice gentleman. I met him years ago out in L.A. I was happy to. I was doing a radio junket. Tony knows the story. And it was the show was hosted by Godfrey. We had all these other great comedians. And as I was leaving, he was sitting by himself in a booth. And I said, hey, Mr. Ross, just want to say I'm a big fan. Oh, what are you doing out here? So I'm doing a radio thing for the Jack Black movie. Oh, really? Well, hope you have a good time. I hope you enjoy it. I mean, like, just so like, I'm like, wow, are we friends? Like, he was so ingratiating. It was amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, he was a real nice guy. We all liked him. We just didn't think he was funny. And he proved us all wrong.
I'll tell you what.
That's what you want to see.
Yeah.
You want to see, I mean, you know, in my career, even like with the workshops I do now, I follow a lot of my workshop people. They call them graduates. I don't feel anyone's a graduate. You know, I work with people. I'm a coach. And then I like to follow the ones that are actually continuing their careers and doing things. And then I bring them back to headline my shows at the Improv.
That's cool.
Okay, so I'm doing it right now with the comic coming up. I mean, he just did his first.
Is there anybody that's coming up right now that you could shout out, give us a shout out, so we can look out for them?
You know, I mean, they're still kind of like
Quint still Patterson, coming up.
Someone, he does a lot of cruise ships. Dan Brown just did his first Dry Bar comedy special. He's coming back in headline for the show next month.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot out there working. I don't like to see they're. You know, names. They're not Jerry Seinfeld yet.
Right. Yeah, they're just coming up. Yeah, that's good though. We want to get record of them. So listen, he predicted this guy.
I always feel good when they quit their day jobs. They're making a living as comedians.
Exactly.
Yeah. Quite a few I've done work with are doing that. They're on cruise ships or they're doing the college. You know, there's different markets too. Comics have to understand the different markets. Comedy clubs are a low rung on the ladder, as far as I'm concerned. You know, as far as money goes, you know,
right, how it works. Right.
You get on a corporate gigs, cruise ship, colleges, bam.
And especially cruise ships. And it's great to see my friends here in Florida and in California, man, getting out there, Northeast, getting back on the cruise ships. I love seeing that. We got about a couple of minutes left. I want to make sure, Tony, that Dave has plenty of time to plug his stuff. I just want to end up, at least for me, real quick, one last question for me. I'm going to make it brief. It's going to be a very open-ended, kind of just a vanilla question. But Dave, do you think, can anyone become a stand-up comedian? I'm not even going to say successful. Can anyone do comedy?
I'm going to say no. I mean, it's like trying to become a dancer. I can't dance.
Okay.
I got a cousin who's a rockette at Radio City Music Hall. Believe me, she can dance. I got none of that. But there are ways. I mean, people dream of getting up on stage and just doing it once. I get a lot of people that have this as a bucket list.
Right.
They want to get up on stage at the Improv or someplace else and do a comedy set just so they can brag about it. They've done it. I've had people jump out of airplanes parachuting before they'll take my workshop because they're more afraid of going on stage and bombing than jump out of an airplane. You know, I can coach someone I'm not going to say they're a professional comedian, but you know what I'm saying. They can write some material right. they want to talk about. But, you know, I also work like with humor speakers, Toastmasters, people like that that want to just add humor to their speaking things.
Yeah.
So can anyone become a stand-up comic? You know, it takes talent. It's like it's becoming a rock star. You know, can you play the guitar? Can you fake it? You know.
And Dave, we got to wrap it. I just want to get people, first off, the author of the book, How to Be a Working Comic. It's on Amazon, correct?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. And the follow-up is called Comedy FAQs and Answers, How the Stand-Up Biz Really Works. That's the one where I really ask the question of all comics. And my most recent one is How to Be a Working Corporate Comedian, which is old.
That's got the George Carlin.
I call it the best comedy writing advice ever.
Dude,
cool. I mean that.
Dave Swenson, we could talk to you for hours. Thank you so much for being a part of the Comedians Uncorked podcast. For Tony Gaud, my name is Pat Lyle.